When 2 feet of rain drenched parts of eastern Kentucky this past July, floodwaters rose so quickly that homes were destroyed and lives were washed away in minutes. It's not known if the devastation was the result of a meteorological phenomenon that scientists have only recently identified as an atmospheric river, a huge amount of wind-driven vapor that forms in the sky. These atmospheric rivers bring much more rain or snow than an ordinary storm, and they're difficult to predict. But meteorologists are working on it, and they hope that understanding the movements of these rivers of wet air could reduce devastation from storms. One of the people behind this work is F. Martin Ralph, a research meteorologist and founding director of the Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes at the University of California, San Diego. And Marty, welcome to Here and Now. Good to have you.
Nice to be here.
So a river of water vapor in the sky. And how long, how big can these be?
So a typical AR, as we call them, would be on the order of 1,000 or 2,000 miles long, about 500 miles wide. And there'd only be three or four of them in the Northern Hemisphere at any one time, and similarly in the Southern Hemisphere. And if you slice across one, imagine like it's a terrestrial river, but slice across it and measure the flow of water vapor being pushed by the wind, and it would be an average atmospheric river is the equivalent of about 25 Mississippi rivers in terms of the discharge into the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh my God, 25 Mississippi rivers, you said?
Yes.
Wow. And I guess that's the answer to this next question. Why do they bring a lot more rain than usual? And we're not just talking about rain on the coasts, right? We're talking about inland rain as well.
Yes, they basically water vapor is the fuel for the precipitation, of course. And the more fuel there's available, then the more precipitation you're likely to get. And by measuring that now and focusing on that characteristic, we've been able to correlate atmospheric rivers with basically the vast majority of flooding in the western U.S. is from ARs. A significant portion, maybe a quarter to a half of the total precipitation for the year in parts of the West are from ARs. And we're learning more recently about some storms in the East where there's heavy precipitation can be fueled by atmospheric rivers as well.
So if these atmospheric rivers are so big, why are they so hard to predict?
One of the reasons we do have challenges with predicting atmospheric rivers, particularly on the West Coast of the U.S., is that they form up over the Pacific Ocean. And we don't have a lot of the traditional observations for weather that we find over land. We send up weather balloons every day from on the order of 100 sites across North America, but we don't have that sort of thing over the ocean.
I see. And I understand that you and your colleagues have developed a warning system similar to the systems that measure hurricane force. Can you describe how that works?
Yeah, there's a lot of value for the public and for what we call situational awareness for regional decision makers and the like to have a heads up if sort of an unusually strong storm is coming. And we haven't really had that so readily in the West Coast. Some ARs aren't really going to be flood makers, but they're super important for water supply. And at some point a few years back, the question was coming up, you know, can we give the public more intuitive heads up on whether this is going to be a big AR or not? So from that, we chose to develop a scale for atmospheric rivers, which we call the AR scale. And it ranks ARs in terms of their intensity and potential impacts on a scale of 1 to 5, just like the hurricane categories or just like the tornado scale. Those numbers represent basically increasing intensity and potential impacts.
I see. So, for example, we began this segment talking about a big storm in eastern Kentucky this past July when floodwaters rose very, very quickly. If that was the result of an atmospheric river, how would this warning system have been used? I mean, it might have given people a heads up to seek shelter, to get out of the way. Was that the idea?
Well, I think the Kentucky storm is probably not the ideal one to explain this on. If I could explain it based on a major storm in the West last winter.
Sure.
We look at the strength of the atmospheric river in terms of its intensity, like how much water vapor it's pushing along, and how long it might stall over a given location. And those combined elements give us the best measure of the potential impact and intensity of the AR. And last November, there were a series of AR storms hitting the Northwest, including British Columbia, and it was capped off by two AR4s back-to-back with a brief gap in between. And at the end of that second AR, there was a kicker within it that washed out roads and highways and bridges and railroads. And sadly, there were loss of life and a lot of agricultural impacts. And that heads up was, I understand from people in the area, considered useful.
So final question, Marty, is climate change making atmospheric rivers more destructive, bigger, more dangerous?
Climate change is basically manifest as a warming of the atmosphere. And the warmer the air is, the more water vapor it can hold.
I see.
That's essentially the fuel in the AR. Climate change is setting the stage for increasing, you know, the occurrence of extreme ARs. They may be fairly rare, but they're plausibly going to be bigger over time.
All right. Well, that's F. Martin Ralph. He's a research meteorologist and founding director of the Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes at University of California, San Diego, talking about atmospheric rivers. Marty, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.